Look, Digital Strategy 1 was launched 2 years ago, and it was a pioneering document for government because it achieved several things. It provided a whole of government agenda for driving the enablers of digital development, and it took a whole of sector view at what we needed to get right in order to fast forward, and that's obviously getting the connection speeds up. It was about getting user confidence and capability up. It was about making sure we started on work for digital content. So there's the famous three C's. Out of that, we had a whole new way of joining together government agencies and working with industry and social partners. It's been a very successful strategy. We've implemented some 70 actions to a tune of some $400 million underway over 4 years. And the time has now come, because the world has moved on, to assess where do we need to go from here. Digital Strategy 2 takes as its starting point the Web 2.0 world that is always on, globally connected, ubiquitous internet that's fully interactive with super fast speed. And it asks the question, now that we know we're going to get that, how are we going to make the best use of it? So the single biggest shift from Digital Strategy 1 to Digital Strategy 2 is a shift of emphasis from getting broadband to leveraging the heck out of it once we have it. We know we're going to be living in a super fast broadband environment. We know we're going to be living digital. How do we get the best out of it? It identifies three areas of key outcome focus: boosting productivity, driving sustainability, and networking our communities. And that is done off the gains that have been made on the three C's, which we will also keep pushing to the next level. So the document is in two halves: outcome group and then the enablers group. It also drives home the theme that no country has more to gain from being digital leaders than New Zealand does. For us, it is the death of distance, the end of remoteness, putting us in the headspace of our customers, bringing us up to our competitors. It is also a crucial way of addressing the 21st century challenge, which is continuing development of post-industrial age while reducing our environmental footprint. Practical terms, this is going to drive things like telework. It's going to make sure that we use digital for sustainability, that we lighten our carbon footprint, we use video conferencing, not air travel, and things like that. Thirdly, we have connected communities, that we make sure that every New Zealander comes along on this journey. We cannot have a digital divide, as I've said before, where the existing differences of economic disparity get layered on differences in access to information. How are we going to do that? We're going to make sure that every community has free digital hub access. It's going to be free points of access in every library, every school, every community centre, through an expansion of the Aotearoa People's Network, and a range of other free access initiatives. We're also going to be driving to a next round of the Community Partnership Fund, which has been very successful in seeding bottom-up community ICT ideas. So we're very excited about it. This is going to be an ongoing program. Rather than saying we're going to have the last word on every project in this document, there is frankly so much happening that we are going to have this as a living thing on the web. This is a snapshot and a framework today, but we're going to be, over the next few weeks and before the election, making further announcements in the areas particularly of digital content, which are going to be quite exciting, and you'll also see more work coming through on specific broadband initiatives. For those who are broadband junkies, yes, this does update the targets, and it does say that by 2012 we want to make sure that we have at least 20 megabytes a second to 80% of the public, and that we have plans in place to make sure that we have 1 megabit per second to every New Zealander. That's 100%, and that means that we've got quite a bit of work to do in the last 3% of remote users. What we anticipate too is that by 2018 we have fibre or equivalent bandwidth speeds, so we're talking 50 to 100 megabits a second to 80% of the New Zealand population minimum. So I think you would say that these are ambitious updates on the previous targets, but they are in line with the developments around the world in super fast broadband connectivity. But I don't want the techies to get excited or hung up about numbers of broadband speeds. The key shift here is not just stretching our level of ambition about broadband, it is making the leap to focus on what do we do with it.
Yeah.
And future-proofing our economy, our environment, and our society so we achieve that. Happy to take questions.
When you say free digital access to sort of every community, when do you expect that to be in place by? I mean, have you set the target date?
There are targets in here. We need to make sure that we build on a program which is already rolling out, which is the Aotearoa People's Network. This provides $7 million worth of more funding for that. It'll be joined together with programs like digital development in schools. Through this program of action, we will make sure that we have a whole range of library, community centre and school access.
But do you have a date where you would like to see every community in New Zealand get access to it?
Check. And we have got a date.
By 2010, 130 libraries in 10 will arrive. So it's
an ongoing program, but that's a short term.
Thank you.
Sure.
Does that mean that all schools or some schools will have to provide free internet access to people in the community?
We would expect
a proportion of them.
Well, we're certainly going to expect schools to provide free access to their students.
Yeah.
We would start by providing free public access through libraries and community centres.
Right, okay.
It may well be that schools find, just as they use their swimming pool or their hall after hours, it'll be a matter for school boards that they can use their internet hubs for wider public use.
Okay.
I mean, for example, after-school homework centres would be an obvious extension.
Okay, but they're not going to be funded specifically to provide public
internet access. We're going to start with the libraries and community centres.
Okay. I'd imagine, just about everybody in New Zealand could get them at 1 megabit per second internet connection now through the satellite services that have been kind of stepped up recently. So, when you say that's a target, what does that mean? Does that mean?
Well, we want to make sure that it's ubiquitous, we want to make sure that we do have a technology neutral framework, Tom, to make sure that we can get the best technology in the best place. And at the moment, what we have is basically a wireline rural network with the odd bit of wireless and satellite that has been up till very, very recently very much a last resort on cost grounds and because of asymmetric speeds. You best describe it as improving the hub by putting fibre deeper into rural areas so that we get a much faster core. Building off that to improve the wire speeds and much more use of wireless, and then seeing continued improvements in satellite. So I think it's the sub-satellite space where we'll see the most dramatic shift.
Okay.
The sub-satellite?
Yeah, the wireless, between satellite and the wire.
Yeah.
Between ADSL and satellite, what do you get? And we know that we're going to have 3G mobile all over the existing 2G footprint. We know that 4G mobile is not far away. We've also put a bucket of almost free spectrum out there so that we get wireless broadband apps out.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, what was that second target by 2020 megabytes to 80% by megabits to 80% by 2012?
Yep. And 10 megabits to 90%.
Yeah.
Which is about double the speeds that are in the telecom OPSEP undertaking. So we're saying OPSEP's a good platform, but we're going to use the government's broadband investment fund and other tools to go beyond that.
And was there a target further
2018, out? Yep, you'll see it in the document, which is saying 80% will have fibre or equivalent super fast bandwidth by 2018.
Yeah.
Which I might add goes further than the opposition's 75%.
So does that involve more cabinetisation, or how physically do you achieve that?
Certainly the 2012 will involve more cabinetisation, I should imagine, but beyond that we're going to be looking at fibre to the home and to the premises.
Right, does that mean that...
Or fibre or equivalent technology, yes, I mean. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not aware that some mobile technologies will be giving fibre speeds.
Yeah, okay. So does that mean the government through BIF will be funding a high investment in capitalisation.
It will be open to a range of technologies. It's technology neutral. It's open to all sorts of any player, not just telcos. Yeah. And the criteria, which were published on, is it Monday or Tuesday? It's been such a busy week.
Tuesday,
thank you. Make clear how we will assess the project proposals that come in, an emphasis on open access, which is again driven home in this document. In fact, it commits that every government network that's built or funded from now on will be open access, which is a much stronger statement of position than we've ever had before. Of course, BIF will be part of it. I should also say that while we like to focus on what we're going to do new and differently, and that's entirely legitimate, otherwise it wouldn't be news, we have a very proud record here of achievement that we're building off, and I don't want to forget that the Broadband Challenge has been extremely successful. Project Probe delivered what it said it would do too, and these are the building blocks that now allow us to stretch to the next level. Equally, I want you to know that the government's ambitious to go further, that we're not resting on those laurels, that we're wanting to own the future and bring that fast forward to every New Zealander. And you know, while the target updates are important and the new programs, and you know, there's a list of new programs here across all of the 3Cs, new digital content clusters, new Connected New Zealand program for small and medium enterprise, we've got teleworking, we've got ICT recycling and so on and so forth. There's a ton of programs under here. The key shift that I want to make sure that we all have in mind is the shift from focusing on enablers, how do we get super fast broadband, to now we know we're getting it. It's not all here yet, but we know we're getting it. So let's plan for what we're going to do with it.
So what do you think people are going to do with it?
What I think people are going to do with it? I think they're going to do almost everything with it. I think it's going to be increasingly given essential in business life, and I think there's going to be a mainstreaming of digital technology that goes even beyond where it is today. From, and you might characterise it by saying, yes, we've got a vibrant ICT sector, and we've got a larger corporate sector, which now, you know, has the CIO on the CEO agenda. But we've got very patchy performance in the SME sector, and we have large gaps in our communities. And so the emphasis here is in helping some of those elements to play catch up.
But, you know, in Auckland recently at the Digital Future Now Summit, when you spoke there, a lot of people seem to be, you know, prominent business people seem to be concerned with your shift from enabling the network to creating all this content, sort of focus on that sort of area. And their attitude is build it, and we will take care of that. That's what we do. Why does government have to be involved in
all
that?
There was a misunderstanding. I think two things. First, it's probable that I know more about what's coming than some of the business leaders who are in the room. So some of them are not yet as confident as I am that we're going to get super fast broadband. I know exactly what's in the telecom OPSEP commitments because I helped write them. I know exactly, but I know a fair bit about some other investment plans that are in the wind. And I'm very confident that the rate of investment in broadband infrastructure in New Zealand has ticked up significantly, almost doubled. And if we got the sixth fastest growth in broadband connections last year, before most of this action hit town, well, we're going to, I hope, do better than that in the years to
come. Almost doubled in how long?
It's almost doubled on a per annum basis, 2008 to 2012, relative to the equivalent previous four-year period. Okay, so we know, for example, of top side of $3 billion worth of new investment coming in that period. Plus, we've got our BIF, which is another $500 million, and we're expecting 2-for-1 leverage on average out of that, so that's another billion. That's $4.5 billion over the next 4 years. The average was around $700 million per annum previously, so we roughly doubled it back of envelope. Okay? $4.5 billion in new investment in this network infrastructure is a significant chunk of change. You know, it's getting up to David Skilling levels of ambition.
I'm still trying to think of the things that particularly SMEs will want to do that will need that much bandwidth.
Oh, not everybody's going to need that much bandwidth. That's why in the BIF we've got a concentration on major and largely urban public and business users. It'll be the bigger businesses that are bandwidth hungry. Now, they're not all in the urban centres, of course, and there'll be some significant farms that need a fair bit of bandwidth because they're doing innovative things. But mum and pop down the road aren't going to need the same bandwidth as, a high-tech factory or a public library or a hospital. And that's why we're starting with the big users and building off that. And may I just offer a quick and somewhat political contrast here between the government's approach and that of the opposition. On Sunday, we had Maurice Williamson saying that their answer to the broadband problem was to set up a public utility and put their $1.5 billion in that. Well, go figure. There's the end of the competitive market model. That doesn't answer the question of how you get to fibre to the home. How you get to fibre to the home, Stephen, is you start with the biggest users and you build everything open access.
But reading through, looking at what Maurice was saying, I think, isn't it something like Peter McCrory's FibreCo, in which people would have a shareholding and where they would use that capacity and open access mode and the competition would still be there?
It could be, but the emphasis is on could, because you wouldn't know, and I don't know that the National Party actually knows. Where I think they want to head is a fibre fund without the regulatory framework. But that's why the agenda statement was interesting, because it was the first time that Maurice Williamson had said a utility with a guaranteed rate of return. Now, you can't do that without a regulated monopoly. And so I think he's evolved, is my frank take on it, from a kind of fibre fund dream to a fibre co-monopoly. Now, we considered that, of course, amongst the options for our broadband investment fund, and we rejected it. We rejected it for two reasons. One, we don't think we're going to get the same leverage out of that, or three reasons, that we would out of our plan. So you're not going to get as much bang for the taxpayer's buck. Second, it undermines all the progress in getting a more competitive open market with everyone doing their best, which is really starting to bear fruit. And the irony of this is, weren't they supposed to be the champions of open competition? And now they're going to do a semi-nationalised monopoly? And thirdly, if you're going to have a fibre co, who's your partner? There's only one partner that can scale up to be a nationwide rollout. And that puts you right back in the old dependence game that we've finally got away from. So why would you want to get back into bed in a monopoly utility with telecom? And we've now got a competitive market with double the investment flowing. It makes no sense at all. And frankly, if it did make sense, we'd have done it.
And this is what this is fundamentally about. I mean, whether it's sufficient to deliver telco services through a single network, which is what National is proposing, or
explain the efficient way of defining not only where the boundary is today, but tomorrow and in 5 years' time between the existing incumbent network and this regulated monopoly quasi-government wraparound that you're going to put outside it to take broadband to the next level. You can't do it, because it's dynamic, and you should be technology neutral so you get the best technology playing. It assumes that some government person is omniscient and they know all the technology plays 10 or 20 years out. Well, that's impossible. This is far too dynamic a sector. As I say, if this was superior, we'd have done it. We analysed it. It's not. Now, there is one other possibility, that they would structurally separate the network of telecom and put it into it so they had one utility, which included half a telecom. If that's what they're planning, I challenge them to come out and say so. That would, of course, have significant implications for the incumbent at a time when I think they're doing their level best to get into the future.
But if you already have a regulated open access network from the cabinet back to the trunk, which you do through regulated backhaul and so on, and then you create a monopoly under
the government's plan. Yep.
Yeah, and you create a monopoly for that last mile access. All you really need to do is create some regulated environment for the link between the two, don't you?
Well, as I say, that's a dynamic, not a static model. So if you know how to do that, then you're a smarter man than I. Mm. Certainly a smarter man than Maurice Williamson, but I'll grant you that. The second thing that you've got to have is a knowledge about how you take that out of loop and where that goes over what time.
The knowledge of how you...
You can't be deterministic. in a multi-technology, multiplayer environment that, you know, the ICT sector, it changes by the week. And if there was a deterministic strategy that would have worked, I'd have done it. You can't. Well, it's too complex.
I guess it's premised in the fact that, wireless technologies, as other technologies, are not going to be a mass option for most people to deliver the kind of bandwidth people want. I mean, that satellite in the sky is like one floating cell phone tower, really, that can be shared out across New Zealand.
Tom, you may be right, but I'm not going to play God. And what I think is a smarter model is to harness the force of the market to the public good by setting up a regulatory framework that encourages competition, put limits around it so that the public can't be ripped off, bust monopolies where they exist, which we've done, and provide incentives to capture the full public benefit of superfast broadband rollout by sweetening the deal with some subsidies. But if you're going to put subsidies, if you're going to put taxpayers' money in, it's got to be technology neutral, it's got to be fully contestable, it's got to be open access, and it's got to be highly leveraged. Now, the National Party plan fails on all four counts. Not as open, it's not as leveraged, and it takes us back to the dependence on incumbent.
Just stepping back a bit, are you concerned at all by the state of telecom at the moment? Its share price is obviously falling quite heavily.
I'm not going to comment on the share price of the publicly listed company. I'm not going to start today.
Okay.
What I will say is the government is fully satisfied with the operational separation undertakings. That's not the end of the story. It's laid out in this strategy. We look forward to speeds which are roughly double those which are legally required in the undertakings. But we think it provides an excellent platform for going forward. And we are comfortable that that company, like others in the market, is facing the future and is going to play its part in bringing a fast digital future to New Zealand.
You've expressed, you know, your own sympathy with the idea of possibly structural separation down the track. Is that still, do you think, a possible kind of long-term outcome for the sector? Or
such a prognostication would run the risk of being interpreted as market-sensitive information. It would be an unwise thing for me to say.
Okay.
What I've said is that we considered a full range of options and alternatives, and including that one, I've said this before publicly, before we opted for the functional separation model, which we believe is international best practice. To say that structural separation is impossible, but we don't think that the cost benefits stacked up.
Minister, has this strategy been informed by overseas experience to any great degree, or is it completely indigenous?
No, it certainly has been. We've been in touch with the OECD, we've been had several sets of meetings with the European Union. I attended with officials the OECD's ministerial meeting on the future of the internet economy in Korea this year, and the Seoul declaration looks very much like Digital Strategy 1. And we're just trying to stay ahead of the pack.
And has local business been consulted?
Sure has. There's a forward here from Fran Wild, who's the new head of the Digital Development Council. If I could just tick another box, we said we'd have a well-supported pan-industry body up and running, and now we've never got it. ICTNZ didn't fly, so we had the courage to start again, and we've now got pretty much universal sign up to the Digital Development Council and Forum, and they'll be having their first full meeting of the Forum this month, or September, I believe.
So they haven't actually had much input into this?
Oh, no, individual businesses have, and there's been a lot of consultation around that structure, but that'll be taken to a whole new level now. Obviously, some of the industry representatives, groups like Business New Zealand, Internet New Zealand, 2ANZ, are regular participants in dialogue, as is the TCF. So I've been working very, very closely with those big bodies. I might say there's cooperation breaking out all over the industry. The TCF's doing a fine job now as well. So overall, I'm very pleased with progress.
Is there anything in there specifically about the carrier network and further developing that, encouraging participation in it, and particularly for potentially businesses that are doing R&D, which I think at one stage was the plan?
Yes, you'll see some interesting language in here about CARIC. Interesting in several respects. potential link between RIANS and a new second Trans-Tasman fast broadband cable, and perhaps even more interestingly, the proposal to investigate a closer link between Karen and the government shared network, and perhaps further concentrating the government's own networking efforts. That would require, if it were to proceed, and we're not making announcements about that today, but that would presumably require a pretty full review of the existing terms of use of Karen, because it would have to be more broadly available than the current network.
Because usage of Karen is quite often very low. Are you concerned about that?
It's a different business model, and it was born that way, designed that way. The traditional telco business models are around medium bandwidth with high utilisation and lots of rental. And RIANS was designed with enormous bandwidth with burst traffic occasionally, and that's why there had to be a subsidy component. And I think what we're saying now is that there may be, government-wide demand for a different kind of pattern of use, and we'll look at that.
Okay. So the pattern
Yes, I'm pretty backed up, so this will be the last question.
Is the pattern of use of Karen, though, informed by the way international research networks are treated? What sort of freedom of movement do you have in broadening its use?
I think the detailed questions are probably best asked of the Minister of State Services. I don't want to get into his patch too much.
Just one last question. I mean, you've obviously been pushing a lot of these issues for many years now through the Knowledge Wave Conference and digital strategy. So is there any risk of kind of inspiration fatigue kind of setting all the things from the public when they see these?
Just ask any young New Zealander if they are fatigued by the digital world. Ask our children, and they'll go, "What?" They'll say, "Can I have another 20 megabits of bandwidth, Dad?" And get out of my way because I want to talk to my friends on Facebook. The great thing, the thing I find continuously inspiring about this sector, is that just when you think you understand it, it changes again. Which, if I might finish with another shameless dig at the opposition, which is why I'm not about to think I know everything by creating a regulatory monopoly for the future of broadband. It's too dynamic, and it ought to be free, it ought to be open, and it ought to be fast. And those are the principles upon which DS2 is based. Thanks.